Okay. Offering respect to guests. Then, Krishna Kshetra Prabhu here points out, even an enemy should be dealt with respectfully if he comes to your house as a guest. And quoting from Srimad Bhagavatam, the law of reception in the codes of the Vedic principles state that even if an enemy is received at home, he must be received with all respects. He should not be given a chance to understand that he has come into the house of an enemy. Bhagavatam 1.18.27 purport. Then Krishna Kshetra continues. You should respect a guest according to his position, determined by wealth, age, and relationship as your relative, by varna, Brahman, Kshatriya, and so on, and by knowledge, teacher, spiritual master. Srila Prabhupada instructs us how to deal with a relative, especially one who is unsympathetic to Krishna consciousness. As father and mother, they should be offered proper respect according to social custom, but you cannot accept their non-godly instructions. Best thing to avoid misunderstanding is to remain silent without any affirmation or negation of their instructions. A letter from Srila Prabhupada, 29th March, 1968. You must treat your father as respectfully as myself, even if you are sometimes ill-treated. You should tolerate. You should follow the example of Prahlad Maharaj. You will never agree to your father's demoniac principles, but still you will try to serve him as faithfully as a nice, obedient son. Letter from Srila Prabhupada, 22nd November, 1968. Krishna Kshetra continues. According to the Pancharatriki Vidhi, one shows respect by 1. Rising from one's seat when a superior approaches, pratyutana; 2. Identifying oneself by name and offering greetings, abhivadana; 3. Offering prostrated obeisances with 5 or 8 limbs, and touching the superior's feet with crossed hands, offering simple or elaborate puja, and giving gifts such as cloth, gold, money, or grains. You would generally respect elders, parents, and teachers by rising from a seating position, identifying yourself and offering obeisances. Worship and gifts are reserved for the spiritual master or for special occasions such as weddings or sacrifices. Okay. So here then, whole idea is someone who's a guest, they should always feel very welcome. They should never feel unwelcome in the situation. Just like here, we see that someone who is maybe even an enemy, who you don't, they should never feel that if they come to your house. These kind of feelings are for in the field. They don't become enemy at the house. They're becoming enemy in some other way. So these things should be left out of the house. Even if they... No, but still when they come to your house, you behave nicely with them, properly with them, and that. Then, one, it can balance maybe some misunderstandings, other difficulties like that. And two, then it deals very nicely with, one keeps a proper atmosphere. Because if one deals improperly with someone who one dislikes or has some difficulty with, this means you think that they are the cause of your disturbance. But they are not the cause. It's the three modes of nature. We have a conditioned nature. It's controlled by the three modes. Someone else has a conditioned nature. It's controlled by the three modes. And the two come in contact with each other, and they're not very compatible, so there's problem. But it has nothing to do, actually, with the individual soul. So if we think this is my enemy, then this means we think I am the controller, I am the doer, because I did something that should come out in one way, and now this person has done something that's come out in another, therefore it's come in another way, therefore I don't like this person. So that means we think that if that person wasn't there, it would go the way I want it. But factually, it won't. It's going to go the way the Lord wants it, either directly or indirectly through His agents. So that is the point. Someone is an enemy because we think we are the doer. We are the controller. So this person is in the way. Or this person is doing something to me. Who can do what? Krishna says in the Gita that the soul can neither be, you know, withered by the wind or burnt by fire or moistened by water or cut with a blade, or you can't do anything. So they can't do anything to us. They can only disturb the conditioned nature, the body and the gross and subtle body. So, and that is, we have given to Krishna. So now it's up to Krishna what he wants to do with it. Right? Because we're attached to it, then certain activities happen to it, we become purified. Right? We get an anxiety, there's some difficulty, some pain, and we are purified. Because we have done all our activities for this body and mind. Right? The body and senses. We've done all our activities. We're in the material world for this body. So therefore, because of our attachment to the body, we have performed so many sinful activities in the past. And because of that, or pious, and because of that we're enjoying or suffering. So therefore, if we want to become purified, then the reactions to our pious and impious deeds must also come to the body and mind. Right? It's only natural. Because of our attachment to the body, we got into the trouble. So it's by the attack, by then the dealings with the body, then we will become purified. Like that. So we must become purified, and we must become attached to Krishna. See, if Krishna could deal nicely with us and we become attached to him, not as the order, it's like this. I go to God, God give me this, God gives me this, and then I think, oh, this is very nice. God's so kind, he has given me this. Right? So then I will go back again. God, give me something else. Right? So people ask, why doesn't God make everything perfect for us? Physically, mentally, you know, everything we want. Why it's not perfect? Because then we will just think God is supposed to give us all these things, and we will forget about God. Oh, he's a nice guy because he gives us all this stuff. Well, when Krishna can reciprocate nicely with you, and you think Krishna himself, he is such a nice person, right? Despite my being sinful, wretched, disgusting, and unworthy, still he deals with me nicely. So then we see Krishna. We don't see what it is he's done. That's the medium, right? Just like if a friend gives you a gift, you don't worry, oh, this has only cost this much, or it's such a simple thing, or they just brought a flower. Flower is nothing. Why doesn't he bring me something useful? You know? It's a medium through which it's seen. So someone who has affection, then when that friend brings that gift, then you appreciate the friend. The gift is just a medium. It's an excuse for exchange. It's some platform on which exchange can be there. Relationship can be there. Expression of a relationship. So when Krishna may give things to the devotee or take care of the devotee, then when one doesn't see those things as the important element, but sees that Krishna is taking care, Krishna is reciprocating, all these things, because Krishna is nice, he has affection for us, he actually loves us, this, that, then Krishna can deal in that way. But then he can also deal in a rough way. One doesn't matter. Right? One may think, yes, if I come to that platform, then Krishna will always deal nicely with me. But once somebody comes to that platform, he doesn't care if it's nice or not nice. Because it's Krishna. Understand? So Krishna can deal nicely with someone on that platform. And someone who's on a lower platform, now and again, something will be there. It keeps them at least faithful to God. If I want something, at least I get it from God. But ultimately, that kind of relationship is very shallow. Very shallow, it doesn't last very long. That kind of relationship doesn't give us satisfaction. So, therefore, we are treating even an enemy nicely. Because for a devotee, someone may be their enemy, but they are not anybody's enemy. You understand? means the other person may consider you their enemy, but you don't consider them your enemy. You understand? This rule applies for those who are materially contaminated, where they do feel the other person is my enemy. When they come to your house, at least you should deal nicely with them. But for the devotee, he doesn't feel anyone is his enemy, though others may feel that that devotee is their enemy. So the devotee still deals nicely with them. And you'll see the relationship changes and all that. You deal nice, people change. And if they don't, doesn't, what do you care? It's their problem. The other person's anxiety. They're the ones suffering, right? If you feel someone's your enemy, then you're always thinking bad. You're always in a bad mentality, always in anxiety, like that, always disturbed. So the devotee feels very sorry for that person. Right? Because they're the ones that are suffering, not the devotee. Right? Someone considers the devotee their enemy, that person who's considering the devotee the enemy, they're the ones suffering, not the devotee. Because the devotee knows, I get what I deserve. Krishna arranges, I get what I deserve. Right? Nothing more, nothing less. Right? Material nature is quite expert. She's been doing this job since time immemorial. And she's dealing with unlimited living entities. So she's quite practiced. So no one gets anything more than what they deserve. There's that one story, I think it's Prabhupada. Not sure. One story is that, oh yeah, that there was this businessman. Very miserly, never used to give anything to anybody, not do anything, very miserly. So he's known as a very miserly person. So then one day I'm not sure if it was a sadhu or a poor person came by and asked him, where is this free feeding going? There's some free food going on. So the guy, without even really looking, you know, because he's busy with his money and all this and that, he doesn't have time for this. He with one finger kind of pointed down that way, you know? So then the person went that way. So then after, when he died, then he was taken before Yamaraj. And, you know, he was sentenced that he would be sent to hell because, you know, no pious activities he did. Nothing. He would be sent to hell, but his finger would be kept out of hell. His whole body would be in hell, but the one finger would be out of hell. Like that. And so then the businessman inquired, well, why the finger will be out? And he says, because one time only, the only thing to your credit that we've looked through all the books, is that one time when some poor person came and asked you which was the direction to the free food distribution, you pointed with that finger to give them direction. That was the closest, the only pious thing you did in your whole life. So then the businessman was thinking, well, if I had known that, then I would have showed him with my whole body where the place was, you know, like that. So, like this, we can see that the material nature is so expert, she notices everything, right? So he did one good thing with one finger, and that one finger will not suffer. So no one should ever think that they're getting more than they deserve or less than they deserve, right? It's always, we're getting more in the way of impious reactions than we deserve, and we're getting less than we deserve in the way of pious. Maybe we should try reversing it, right? Thinking, why don't we think, oh, I'm getting too much, you know, wealth and facilities and that, and I'm not getting enough reactions, anxieties and disease, and right? Why is that? Because we are simply thinking about our own senses, our own position. We're only thinking about ourselves. So now we have to learn to change this so that now we think about Krishna. We're attached to ourselves, we have to learn to be attached to Krishna. So here, this whole aspect of of, being able to receive nicely a guest is being taken to the extent that even an enemy must be treated nicely. Why? Because any guest that come has to be taken as representative of the Lord. Atithi means not scheduled. They were not planned, just showed up. So we have to be, because at any time the Lord may show up. And so in this way, even to the point that even an enemy comes, we have to deal nicely with them. Because even in the enemy, we have to understand that the Lord is the controller. This person is my enemy by some previous impious activity I have performed. I have been so many people's enemy in my last lives. You know, so now just this one person is there. So I am very fortunate. Right? How much I have done. So like this, it still connects one to the Lord, makes you think of the Lord. So the Atithi Seva means is we're seeing it in relationship to the Lord. Okay. Then another aspect here is then in dealing with relatives, especially if they're, before we mention, if they're, you know, somewhat dealing, respect is always there. I think it was someone was telling me. One devotee was telling me that Srila Prabhupada had mentioned to Subhag Maharaj that all the culture and proper behavior and all these things that you learn from your parents, you're not supposed to lose that. By becoming a devotee, coming to ISKCON, doesn't mean you throw all that out the window. No. Srila Prabhupada told him that I have come to teach you about transcendental knowledge. You have learned the culture. You maintain that. And now I will teach you the spiritual subject matter. So in the same way is then we can deal nicely with the parents, this, that, deal properly. Though if their instructions are not very beneficial, like they're not devotees or something, then that may be ignored. We don't say yes to it, we don't say no. We tolerate. Right? Because that principle of respect for the parents and all that should be dealt with properly. Right? If one's younger has to deal, one has to deal. He gives the example of Prahlad Maharaj. We don't agree to their non-devotional ideas, but we still try to do things properly. You know? Or if we're older, then whatever. We do things how we like on our own. But otherwise, then we should never disrespect. That is there. We should always behave properly. Then, in the Pancharatrik Vidhi, it mentions that how one can show respect is rising from one's seat when a superior approaches. That's called pratyutana. Pratyutthana. So now, uttana means up. So the reason why you stand is when a superior comes, your life airs immediately start to go up. Like that. So if you stand up, then you catch them. If you don't, they leave the body. So you become weak. So by not standing when someone superior comes, you actually lose energy. Like that. That is the, metaphysical reason. So the life airs themselves rise up to greet the person. So they are doing. Now it's just a matter of you are intelligent enough to also do the same thing. Right? Like that. So this is the Lord's arrangement. That those who are superior to us, then we stand up. Then we maintain the culture, we maintain our health. Yeah, all these things are maintained. Then two, identifying oneself by name and offering greetings. Abhivadana. Means is we should say who we are. Like sometimes I hear devotees using the phone. They call up somewhere else and when they get to the other place, they ask, who are you? Who's speaking? No, you're supposed to first say who you are. Then you ask, may I know who's speaking? You know? So when we're dealing, is first we identify ourselves to a superior. We don't ask their name first. We say who we are. Then, after that, then they can identify themselves. And we may, you know, say some greetings, you know, Hari Bol or Hare Krishna, or whatever is. Then offering obeisances with 5 or 8 limbs. So that'll come. Here, 77. 77. Okay. Wow. I think we'll leave this offering of obeisances till we get to the 64 items. Okay. We just mentioned it here so we know. 8. Hari Bhakti Vilas tells us how to offer Dandabhat Pranam. So offering obeisance with 8 angas or 8 parts of the body, that's astanga, means your feet, knees, chest, hands, head, sight, mind, and words. Yeah. So the sight means is you see the person first or you see the deity first. Then when you offer your obeisances, then the mind will be thinking of that, who that person is. Then words is you're offering some prayer. You know, you're saying obeisances to the spiritual master, a bunch of culprit, rubious cha, something is being said. Then does it say for punch? Panchanga means 5 angas, the knees, arms, head, intellect, and words. Okay. Then it says, and touching the superior's feet with crossed hands. In other words, the right hand touches the left hand touches the right. So this is, it's very important to understand the application of this. Because in the last few years, recent years, I've seen devotees have come across this point and started to practice. So you see, sometimes see devotees offer obeisances. And they'll put down and they'll put their hands about this far apart. So now the idea is with the right hand you're touching the left foot of the senior person. And with the right left hand, your right hand you're touching their right foot, your left hand you're touching their left foot. Now if we keep the hands about a foot apart, then we can understand that either the person we're offering obeisances to is about, you know, 15 feet tall, or they're bow-legged, or you know, in some way maybe it's Astavakra Muni who's bent in 8 places. Because no one stands with their feet 1 foot apart, unless they, you know, they've just gotten off a horse or an elephant, you know, or the, you know, something like that. When someone stands, their feet are basically almost touching each other. Now, also, these pancharatrik rules and the culture, the Vedic culture, is very fine, very refined. So this means that when one is touching, that doesn't mean it has to be so gross that the one hand is completely over on this foot and that one's over on that foot, and it becomes a very kind of like, you know, kind of rough thing. It means just the foot means the foot. Means otherwise, what do you define as the foot? Right? Right? If you walk by something and just touch it, you know, maybe on the side of your foot or back or the front, you'll say, my foot touched it. So that means anywhere on the foot. So therefore, you just by putting the hands like this, right, then one can touch those 2 feet. Just one is obvious that the fingers of the one hand are in 1 foot, the fingers in the other are on the other foot. So it's not a gross thing. So then, since this is only practice when you actually do that, right? That you would then definitely make the attempt to touch the 2 feet like that. So that is not very often. So generally, we're doing this ceremoniously. So then, if we are doing the panchanga pranams, means just on the knees, that means you'll put the right hand And then on top of that, put the left hand. Right? Or the other way around, whichever is comfortable. It means one hand right on top of the other. Because that's crossed. That has to be understood. It is crossed. It's not crossed only if you go like this and they're 3 feet apart. You know? That's the whole point. Is if we have that kind of subtleties, then best is don't bother trying to dress the deities, cook, dress nicely, or anything. You won't be able to do it. It's too gross. Right? If you can't appreciate that putting one hand on top of the other is crossed, then we have a problem. Then if we're doing Astanga, we can either do, means full dandabats, do in the same way, or we can do with the hands put together like in Pranam Mudra, and you cross the thumbs. The thumbs are crossed. You can also do that in Panchanga, but generally you'll find it's a little more difficult because of the placement of the elbows. You know? Like that. So it's easier the other way. But whatever. One can either just put one hand directly on top of the other, or put the hands together like in the Pranam Mudra and cross the thumbs. So by crossing the thumbs, that gives the... What do you call it? Yeah, the effect of that. Because it's ceremonious. Ceremonial. Like that. And the feet do not need to be crossed. Some places you see they like to cross them. Many times you see in South Indians especially, some of the hands are crossed, the feet are crossed, you know, the brain's crossed. You know, all those things are, everything becomes crossed. But I once heard an explanation on why that you see that the feet are crossed. One is just it's something more to do, it adds more ritual, so someone feels good doing it. But the basic principle comes down to this. That because you see it a lot in South, that in South India, when the ladies go to offer their obeisances, then they're very afraid that the wind or breeze may blow their sari up. So then they catch the sari in their foot, between the 2 feet, to make sure that it doesn't blow. And so then the small children, seeing this, then they think this is something important. So then you see the boys will also do it, even though all it was to keep their mothers sari from blowing. So they learned it in this way. Right? So there's no Pancharatrik rule that you have to cross the feet. Right? Just the feet should be on the ground. Right? You shouldn't bend at the knees, pick your feet up, or be, you know, doing all kinds of funny things. You're supposed to, the feet are on the ground, you know, the knees are on the ground, like that. These are the things described. Okay. Then offering simple or elaborate worship, depending, one may just offer one, you know, just greetings like that, or we may find, you know, we're offering some chandan, or some garlands, or we may be doing for receiving someone more senior, maybe doing, you know, foot wash and offering artik, or, you know, so many things, whatever may be there. And giving gifts and things like that. So in a very formal thing, or special occasions, this may be done. These kind of activities, worship and gifts. So he mentions receiving spiritual master, other senior devotees, or special occasions such as weddings or sacrifices, where you might come and who is the yajamana, who the beneficiary of the ceremony is. Some gifts may be given or some other kind of respect or worship. Okay. So are there any questions on any of this? Yes. Speak loudly. Yes. This is incarnations. This is means they just appear to you. But that point is at any time he can come if he wants. So you're restricting him. So if God shows up to you now, you'll say, wait a minute, wait a minute. Here in the book here means the last one was when you and Balaram came, and the next one is Kalki, and then the Channa avatar that's hiddenly referred to is Lord Chaitanya 500 years ago. I'm sorry, you're either 500 years late or you're, 27,000 years early. Now, you got that straight, huh? I mean, you wrote this stuff. You don't know this stuff? I mean, come on, give us a break. Huh? Is that what you're going to do if he shows up? Okay, I'll tell you a story. Prabhupada tells. Right? So, he tells a story. One day, there was this old lady. She used to, for her livelihood, she used to go to the forest. And in the forest, she used to collect firewood. And she was doing this for a long time. So one day she went into the forest and she collected so much firewood. And she put it on her head and she was carrying it. But because she's getting older and the bundle was very large, then she had some difficulty. And she was walking and, she tripped or something happened and it fell off her head. And then she tried to pick it up and there was no one around, absolutely no one. So she couldn't pick it up herself. It was impossible. And if she didn't pick it up and take it now to the market, she couldn't sell it. And then, she wouldn't make her money, she wouldn't be able to eat, all these things. So much anxiety was there. So she started crying and just calling Krishna's name. So because she called so, piteously and so sincerely, for Krishna's help, then Krishna came and said, you called me, how may I help? And she said, this bundle of sticks has fallen off my head and I can't put it back on my head, And so Krishna, that's okay, no problem. So Krishna has picked it up, put it on her head, and she said thank you and then walked on, and then Krishna disappeared. And then she thought, what an idiot I am. Krishna came here, I could have, asked for pure love for him or service, something like that. I simply asked to put this bundle of sticks on my head. So the whole point is we at any time Krishna can appear, right? So we have to be ready for that. Otherwise, just like this lady, if Krishna suddenly appears, we won't know what to do, or we'll just say, hey, this guy over the temple is bothering me, or this or that, or so many things like that. I can't get a proper visa, and oh, no problem. Okay, and then disappears. You understand? Yes or no? Okay, thank you. Anything else on this point? Nothing else? Okay. Then, now we've talked so much about how you receive the guests. Now sometimes we may be a guest. So that means we have to know how to behave as a guest. This is also very important. So, Krishna Kshetra Prabhu writes, in Chaitanya Charitamrita, Madhya Leela, 8:49 purport, Srila Prabhupada cautions us against indiscriminately accepting invitations, especially if the occasion involves eating food. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu accepted the invitation of the Vaishnava Brahmana. Even though a person is a Brahmana, strictly following all the rules and regulations of Brahminical culture, if he is not a devotee, a follower of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, one should not accept his invitation. At the present moment, people have become so degraded that they do not even follow the Vedic principles, to say nothing of Vaishnava principles. They eat anything and everything, whatever they like. And therefore, the members of this Krishna consciousness movement should be very cautious about accepting invitations. Because one takes on karma and consciousness of someone who invites you for a meal. That comes automatically. They're giving you a donation of food. So along with that comes karma and consciousness. Lord Chaitanya says in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, also in connection with this, what is it? Vishayera Anna kaile? Huh? Dushta hoiman. Huh? Whatever. The main point is the mind becomes... If you eat the food of materialists, the mind becomes disturbed. Because all what they think comes into your head. All their desires, their values, their consciousness, you get that all in your head. So one should always remember that when one is eating things from the outside. Right? Now if you're traveling, there's nothing, you know, else to available, then one can pay money for things, and that purifies of the karma. But the consciousness still comes. Like that. That you're not going to get around. Right? Means you're traveling on the train, and you get out and you buy some, you know, pakoras from the pakora wala. Like that. You watch them make it, you know? Then you pay some, whatever the price is, and you take that. So you don't get the person's karma, but you get his consciousness. That comes along with it. So these are just, that's why one should be very careful about what one eats and all these different things. So one should be careful as to whom you're accepting guests for eating. Then, as far as behavior, then Krishna Kshetra Prabhu writes, a Vaishnav guest should behave ideally, whether his host is another Vaishnav or a well-wisher of Vaishnavas. What follows are a few commonly accepted points of etiquette for Vaishnav guests. 1. If you are an invited guest, you should not overstay your invitation. For example, if invited for a meal, you may rest a short time after the meal to aid your digestion, but do not burden your host by staying and conversing for several hours unless encouraged to do so. 2. Do not bring your own guests on the strength of your invitation. If you wish to invite other guests, ask your host's permission. 3. If you are permitted to use a telephone, fax machine, or other such facility, offer to pay accrued expenses. Then 4. When planning to visit a friend or acquaintance uninvited, try to let your prospective host know when you will arrive and how long you intend to stay. Five, unless you have been invited or have informed your host, try to avoid arriving in a temple or your host's house at noontime or early afternoon, when both the deities and the persons in the and persons in general rest after lunch. And if you stay for some days at your host's house, it is appropriate to give token gifts to the household residents as a gesture of gratitude. Srila Prabhupada did this after staying at a life member's house for some days in Bombay. So these are some general points. In other words, just because you're invited doesn't mean automatically, you know, your whole family, you know, your kids' friends, your kids' teachers, and then students of the teacher automatically come in the invitation. We may laugh, but I've seen it happen many times. Like that. So we have to be very cautious that when we're invited means we are invited. Then if we think of someone else, then we can ask, hey, what about this person? They may say yes, they may say, oh, no, or there may be other things we don't know about. Oh, some these other persons are going to be there, or there's no space, or it's this kind of a program, and they wouldn't be suitable, you know, like that. So we should let them know. Yeah, and we shouldn't, yeah, okay. Okay, so any questions on this? In other words, we should behave nicely also. Should be very considerate, very sensitive to the situation in the house, to what's going on. You know, should not be overly critical of things in the house. Like we see when Srila Prabhupada was staying, what was that? When he first went to America, then in Pennsylvania, oh, the Butlers, right? That was what their names? The Butler's house. And they were some relative or something of a pujari in Vrindavan that he knew. Huh?
The son of Vrindavan.
Oh, so one gentleman in Vrindavan, his son was living in America, and his wife was, you know, American, and so he used to stay there, and, you know, they would smoke this, that, you know, in the refrigerator was all kinds of crazy things, and he never said anything like that. He used to be very pleasant in the house, and knowing that their kid, he would play with the kid, and like this, and afterwards, the man's wife had mentioned that he was the most pleasant guest she'd ever had. You know, so nice and never complained about anything, never disturbed, anything like this. So one should be very, very sensitive to the other's life and not disturbed, because they are taking care. They are hosting you. So when you go to their place, then you have to adjust with their facility. Like that, yes.
Remember that Prabhupada, she was saying that Prabhupada was always very satisfied. And even if he wouldn't have any arrangement for him or no engagement for him like this, he would just sit and chant and be satisfied. And she felt he would be a very comfortable guest, because she wouldn't have to be an anxiety about him.
To keep him entertained, yeah. So that's there. He was saying that Mataji was saying that Prabhupada, she had no anxiety about, you know, how to entertain him, how to engage him. You know, what arrangements she had. Whatever arrangements were there, he was satisfied. And if she had nothing for him to do, he'd sit and chant. So she had no anxiety that, you know, how to take care of the guest or anything. He's just very, very nice and pleasant. Yes?
What do you have to do when fishing the congregation of members would like to go back to home? And anytime soon, this spontaneously offer, maybe some food. What do you do? Sometimes you don't even like to.
Yeah, best is if we are offered, like, especially if we are in those who are like kind of like favorable well-wishers in that. But, you know, they're not very strict in the principles or not at all. Then best is to just stick to, you know, just say, you know, huh? You can find what we just ate before coming, this, that. You know, stick to water, fruits, anything not grains. Grains is what carries the real serious, you know, karma consciousness. Like that. Even if they are proper, you know, like this and that, then the tradition is generally to take those things which are called paka. Paka ana. Paka rasoi. Like that. Means those things that have been cooked in ghee. You know, puris or paratas, or, you know, rice that's been fried in ghee, or these kind of things. One doesn't take, you know, kacha, you know, or what's called kachi rasoi, like that. That means things that are just boiled in water, like plain rice, you know, chapatis, they're not fried in ghee. Means you may put ghee on afterwards, but it's still considered kacha. This will come up a little bit in when we get around to menus and cooking and things, but it's a very interesting point to note. In the Vedic culture, when it says uncooked, uncooked means it was not cooked in ghee. So rice is uncooked. Dal is uncooked. Chapatis, even they have ghee on it, are uncooked. Something that's cooked means you put the ghee first and then you put the item into it and cook it. You know, like you put the ghee first, the spices, then you put the sabji inside. That's called, and then put water, boil it, and all that. That's called cooked. But if you put the sabji first, let's say like you put cabbage, right? And then so much water comes, you boil off the water, and then at the end you put the chaunce. That's called uncooked. Dal, you boil it first, then you put the chaunce at the end. That's uncooked. Huh? So therefore in the Vedas, Ayurveda, when it talks about uncooked food, it doesn't mean raw food. It means food that was not cooked in ghee. Cooked food means things that were cooked in ghee. You know, like puris, halavas cooked in ghee, pushpanas cooked in ghee, you know, your cheese sabji has been deep fried, this kind of things. That is called cooked food. Like that. You know, even something like sweet rice, because that's the milk, it has the ghee in it, you put in the rice, that's cooked, so that's called also cooked food. So you'll see in the Krishna book, it many times mentions, the Brahmins were fed with cooked food. That means all very... So generally when we go to someone's house, outside, in the congregation or that, best is they should make cooked food. Like that. And in India, it's very much a tradition. They expect, if Brahmins come to their house, sadhus come, they'll give puris and things, that kind of stuff. They'll never give, you know, plain rice, this and that. Like that. Because if it's cooked, it reduces that the effect of karma and consciousness. And if it's uncooked, you know, meaning it's just, you know, boiling water, this, that, then it carries more. More karma and consciousness. Yes. Same. If it's cooked in mustard oil or, you know, buffalo ghee, you know, sump oil, 20-30 weight, whatever it is. If it's been cooked in some, you know, some kind of edible, viscous substance, then that's called cooked. So, of course, the best is that it's cooked in ghee. You know? Yes.
Can we accept the drink?
So, yeah, question is that, you know, anything in Vrindavan is automatically prashad, you know, or anything we get from the Braj buses. That may be on one platform, but that's on the platform of understanding that it's by Krishna's mercy only we can come into the Dham. It's by Krishna's grace He has arranged that we've received this foodstuff to eat. Like that. And then when we're taking that, whatever we have, we're remembering Krishna. But if it's just that, oh, we're in the Dham, we don't have to bother with the offering because we're lazy and then, you know, we don't think of Krishna when we're eating, then benefit will be very, very minimal. Second thing is, because if people gave it to you for free, you still get karma and consciousness. That's just, that is the benefit of them feeding you. You go to their house, they feed you, then one of the plus points for their side is, by doing this, it is a pious thing, by feeding guests, or feeding sadhus, or feeding devotees, you know. But, you know, but on the other hand, it's also, they get rid of karma. That's why they want you to take more and more, because you get more and more karma. You know, like that. Huh? That I'm not sure. Something will come there. Like that. If it's bad money, many times when people would give donations to Prabhupada, if the source was not good, how they've gotten it is not good, you know, then he wouldn't keep it for using for projects that he'd direct. You know, they'd give him donations and he would put those into like funds and use those then for like the MVT and things like that. These are all from donations that people gave to Prabhupada. He would take that money and just put it into the donation box of the deities. Like that. He wouldn't keep that. You know? So one has to be very careful. Because with those comes also something. Like that. That's why you see sometimes people, they get a lot of money, but because it's bad money, then it ruins the whole family. They all become materialistic, everything breaks up, falls apart, they lose all their money and wealth and everything. Anything else? Yes. What's the difference between karma and consciousness? Karma means it carries a reaction, and consciousness means it carries a mentality. means that you'll, means the, you getting the consciousness means you'll find all kinds of strange things popping up in your mind that weren't there before you ate just what you ate. You know, like the latest movie or whatever it is. You know, you just went to the Dokla Walla and then, you know, all the, how you say, very strong interest they had in the heroin, in the, not heroin meaning the drug, meaning the, how you say, let's put it into another way, into, huh? The female movie actress that was the main, the leading actress in the last four movies that they just saw, and all that desire, then suddenly you'll find that coming through our mind, and we're wondering, where did all that come from? You know? But if we think back, it wasn't there before we ate the doklas. But after we ate the doklas, then mysteriously we have all this crazy nonsense going through our head that, you know, we never really thought about before. Does that make any sense? Of course, so that means it'll affect the consciousness also. It means when they, point is when they give you something to eat, karma and consciousness come along with it together. If you pay for it, it cuts out the karma. The consciousness still comes. It's not that it's one or the other. Both are coming, but only if it's being paid for, then it cuts out the karma. You know, and even if it's being paid for, if it's pukka, then it reduces it more. You understand? So if you're buying food that is kaccha, then that will carry more consciousness, bad consciousness, than things that are pukka. Right? You understand? Oh, I see. Why is the food passionate if it has certain ingredients even though it's been offered to the deity? Because it's going to have that reaction on your body. It's prasad, so you're purified in that. It won't affect the consciousness from that way. But because of its effect on the body, therefore, then the body becomes more agitated, and then since we're attached to the body, then we become agitated. Yeah, if you're less attached to the body, it wouldn't affect as much, but if you're less attached to the body, you'd probably not likely be eating those things either. Yeah, I mean, they come together. I mean, it's like the prasad is there, it's been offered to the deity, but, you know, you don't necessarily have to, you know, eat 5 kilos of halava. You know, you could just take a little bit. Anything that creates too much energy or lust or agitation in the body, Prabhupada also mentions even halava is in the mode of passion. This is very rich and heavy. Anything that's overly rich and heavy is the mode of passion. They're made out of the things of the ingredients are the are from the mode of goodness, but the particular combination creates mode of passion. But it's because all the ingredients are goodness, then it can be offered. You know, it's accepted. So the thing is therefore we don't eat so much of those things. Right. Like that. Something more would be, you know, just pleasantly, you know, basically anything. You know, you're pleasantly cooked. Anything that's pleasantly cooked that's not too rich, heavy, and spicy. Like that. That's nicely balanced in its cooking and all that. We're just saying that these things create more rajas. Like that. But they're within the, you know, acceptable things to offer. You know? Just like achar. Basically, except for lemon achar, all other achars are simply for taste. They don't have any medicinal value. You know, unless it's, or maybe if it's amlaki, then it would be. And otherwise, all the other achars are for taste. Only lemon achar actually has some medicinal value. But even that, if you take too much of it, it's not good. You know, so those things, that's a lot of spicy. You know, it mentions things that are too hot, too sour, too bitter, too pungent, too astringent. You know, it doesn't mention too sweet. So the heaviness in the halava is not the sugar, you know, or the grains, it's the amount of ghee. Yes?
But Maharaj, then you said that the best kind of defile is pakka, which is cooking ghee.
No, that's the best of eating outside, like that.
But if you're eating
Eating at home or the regular, then you'll generally try to eat more on the line of more light and kacha. And just once a week at festivals, then you eat pakka, like that. That's the proper thing. Like before, the cooking was very, very simple and all that during the week in the temples before. And then on Sunday, then they had a big blowout feast, and that would keep everybody busy until, you know, about the next, I guess the following about Thursday, you know. Monday you would vow never to eat another feast again. Tuesday you're still quite strict in that. Wednesday, you know, you have to be more careful. By Thursday you're starting to look forward to Sunday again, you know. And by Sunday you're ready again to pack in, you know, whatever you ate. Like that. Yes.
Does the cooking in ghee cut off any consciousness or only the bad consciousness?
Huh?
Does the cooking in ghee cut off any consciousness or only the bad consciousness?
Cuts the food cooked in ghee means it cuts down on the consciousness. You know? It means material. Consciousness means this material consciousness. You know, we're not worried about spiritual consciousness. We're worried about material. You know, so whatever desires are there for material gain, you know, or reactions from, you know, previous material impropriety, you know, so it's like, yeah, any of that. Because even pious material desires are a disturbance, are a obstacle to advancement. Anything else? Okay. The next section is service to the holy Dham, Dham Seva. So then Krishna Kshetra Prabhu writes, "You should serve a sacred place like Mathura, Vrindavan, Puri, or Dwarka, abodes of the Lord, and the bank of the Jamuna or Ganga. These places where the Lord resides and performs wonderful pastimes." Oh, these are places where the Lord resides and performs wonderful pastimes. The Dham is the manifestation of the Sat potency, Sandhini Shakti, or the energy manifesting eternal existence, and provides the support for the Lord's appearance and pastimes. The Dham, which is under Lord Balaram's supervision, purifies the fallen souls. So, types of service to the Dham. Service to the holy Dham consists of hearing about the Dham, remembering the Dham, glorifying the Dham, desiring to visit the Dham, observing the Dham from afar, going towards the Dham, circumambulating the Dham, touching the Dham, taking the Dham as one's shelter, and repairing, beautifying, and cleansing and cleaning the Dham. Of these forms of Dham Seva, residing in Mathura Mandal is said by Srila Rupa Goswami to be one of bhakti's most important angas. If you are fortunate and pure enough to reside permanently in the Lord's Dham, you will daily perform many aspects of seva, nitya dham kriya. Whereas if you do not permanently reside in the Dham, service in the form of observing from afar, going towards the Dham, circumambulating the Dham, taking the Dham as your shelter, and repairing, beautifying, and cleaning the Dham will be more occasional. However, even if you do not live in the Dham, you may daily hear about the Dham, glorify the Dham, and desire to reside in the Dham. Then, rules for Dham Seva. In his Krishna book, Srila Prabhupada writes, "The pilgrims to the Dham take bath, worship the deity, and give charity. They are also recommended to fast one day. They should go to a place of pilgrimage and stay there at least for 3 days. The first day is spent fasting, and at night they can drink a little water, because water does not break the fast." Krishna book, Vidyadhara, Liberated. In his Chaitanya Charitamrita, Srila Prabhupada writes, "Those who have not attained the stage of spontaneous love for Krishna should not live in Vrindavan very long. It is better for them to make short visits. One should also avoid climbing Govardhan Hill to see the Gopal deity." Chaitanya Charitamrita, Antya Lila, 1339 purport. One should remember that is not a letter. That is a book. Okay, so then we see that the Dham means the place where the Lord is residing and performing his pastimes. So to be able to, so this is a manifestation, here it mentions, of the Sandini Shakti. Sandini Shakti is the platform of eternality, of existence, eternal existence. So the Dham is situated. Yeah, so she provides the support for all the Lord's pastimes, all the different activities. And she is under the shelter of Lord Balaram, or in Mayapur, then Lord Nityananda. So then we have so many kinds of service we can do. We can hear about the glories of the Dham. You know, how, well, the benefits of residing here, the glories of the Dham. You know, so many different aspects the Shastra gives. Then we can remember the Dham. You know, what we have seen, pictures, the mood that is there, different things that have happened there, the beauty of the Dham, the feeling, the mood, all this. We can glorify the Dham, that we will always talk about the Dham's glories. We know, you know, about what is the speciality. Like in Mayapur, that the place is so glorious that whatever one does, even one just walks somewhere, one gets the benefit of doing parikram. Or when one, even he lays down to rest, he gets the benefit of doing a dandabat, you know, that you're offering obeisances, like this. So the Dham in Mayapur is very, very special. In this way, is that so many offenses are overlooked, so much so much benefit is there from living in Mayapur. As we see here, Prabhupada mentions about living in Vrindavan. So Mayapur then is more very merciful. So by approaching Mayapur and getting the blessings of Mayapur, then one can approach Vrindavan very, very nicely. This is important aspect, is that one approaches Vrindavan from Mayapur. Then we can see the Dham from afar, we can go towards the Dham, then we can do circumambulation of the Dham, then we can touch the Dham, take the dust, we can accept the Dham as one's shelter, that this is one's shelter, this is one's place. One does not have another place to live, another shelter. Whatever happens, you want it to happen to you here. Like that, if something goes wrong, you're not immediately ready to go to some safe place, you know, outside the Dham. But the Dham is the place you want to be. That is the real safe and shelter. then one can repair different things that are there, buildings or gardens, make beautiful gardens, to beautify. One can clean, sweeping or picking up things, in some way try to make the Dham look more attractive. Some way try to beautify. So this is service also to the Dham. So one should try to do how much one can of these activities and take advantage. That is the blessings of being able to live there. Any questions on this? Yes. How do we practically approach Vrindavan through Mayapur? Because the son of Mother Yashoda has come and has appeared as the son of Mother Sachi and is performing his pastimes here with all of his eternal associates of Vrindavan. And as he has taken Srimati Radharani's mood and come here, then all the other devotees have also come in various forms here. So it is the same Vrindavan. Right? This one. That one is... That one is... Where's that one? The one that's got... I can't remember. It's got Nadia in it. Yeah, A Vrindavane, say She Vrindavane, A Nadia. And then there's another line. Oh, the song is describing that the son of Mother Sachi is the same, that same son of Mother Yashoda. And the same Nadia is Vrindavan. So by getting the Lord's mercy here, by getting Lord Chaitanya's mercy, then we are actually able to approach Vrindavan. Narottam Das Thakur points out that one cannot buy a ticket to Vrindavan. One has to be allowed to enter. Otherwise there's a thin covering of this Prauda Maya. Right? And so one can go buy a ticket and go and walk on that Prauda Maya. One may not actually enter Vrindavan. Entering Vrindavan means you have that feeling. You gain a feeling of the Dham, the mood of the Dham, the spiritual atmosphere. One is not just simply caught up in going to Loy Bazaar and getting lassis at the lassi shop and buying things across the street and, you know, it's too hot or it's too cold or too many mosquitoes or the brajbasis are an annoyance or there's too many pigs or it's too dirty or it's too much dust or... That's the Prauda Maya. Like that. But when one goes and one appreciates the spiritual atmosphere of the Dham, like that, then that we can gain by going through Mayapur. Does that make some sense?
Come first to Mayapur and do some service there, and you go to Vrindavan and you are more able to appreciate it.
Yes. If one comes and renders service here first, then it's much easier to enter into Vrindavan. Of course, if you have some very advanced persons who have done this in their previous life or in this life, they have done, you know, so much service to the preaching mission, then they may be able to go to Vrindavan like that. But that is, the Samkirtan mission is there, you know, in the streets of the world, wherever the devotees are chanting the Lord's glories, distributing the books and the, you know, the message of Lord Chaitanya. So that is also, they gain that association. So they may have pleased the Lord so much that they are also still able to go. But, Srila Prabhupada mentions, unless one comes to the platform of spontaneous devotional service, then one should be very careful about going to Vrindavan. Otherwise, one will get caught up in all kinds of mundanities. Okay. Does that make sense? Yeah, you had it once.
Yeah. I'm enjoying the talk about service to the Dham. What does it exactly mean by touching? Does that mean just standing on the Dham?
Oh, what does it mean by touching the Dham in service? Generally, that means in offering obeisances to the Dham, taking the dust from the Dham and putting it on your head or smearing it all over your body or, you know, like that. Because you want to touch the Dham. You know, like when Akrura came and to Vrindavan and saw Krishna's footprints, he got off the chariot and then took that dust and it rolled on the ground and all that kind of stuff. Okay? Yes.
Trying to beautify the Dham, it means that he's seeing some negative qualities. The Dham is not beautiful, the Dham is not clean.
Oh, I see. So, I understand the logic. Like in the same way as that we make nice garlands and nice outfits for the deity of Krishna because he doesn't actually look so good, so we have to dress him up to make him look a little better. That's the same logic, right? Isn't it? Why it's not the same logic? The Dham is not beautiful, therefore we have to beautify it to make it beautiful, otherwise it's not. So in the same way, Krishna is not so beautiful, so then we have to give him, you know, nice silk outfits and nice garlands and nice headdresses and, you know, all these kind of things, otherwise he won't look very beautiful either. No, the Dham's already beautiful. This is our service to try to make an attractive and nice place, because the Lord is here. You make a nice garden, then it's for the Lord's pleasure. You understand? Okay, let us try another example, since the deity one didn't work in this. You have your girlfriend, she's really beautiful, right? But now when she puts on some nice dangly earrings, she looks even better. So is that she's an ugly hag, therefore you bought her nice dangly earrings? Yes? No? Does it make sense?
Yeah.
Okay. Okay, so then, yes.
Sometimes when we, the boys, we go to Vrindavan, many of the boys, myself, I felt like I've been there for 2 weeks, 10 days, like you just can't wait to get back to my uncle. These are totally considered as our friends because they're supposed to be treated as the same Dham. But you just can't wait to get back to it.
Oh, no, because if one, especially if one's living in one Dham and one visits the other, then one's connection is through service. So one has maybe more, you know, regular and solid service in the Dham where you live. So you visit the other Dham and you appreciate it very much, you know, in the flavor, and you do service and you go to on pilgrimage and all that. But at some point, then one wants to get back to one's regular service, like that. So then it's not a problem. But one should be very careful, one sees them as non-different. Like that. At least theoretically, one knows that Vrindavan and Mayapur are the same place. Just the the arrangement has been made of Mayapur to create a suitable atmosphere for Krishna to try to taste the mood of separation of Srimati Radharani. So Srimati Radharani has expanded this form of Vrindavan for Krishna to be able to enjoy those pastimes. Does that make sense? Okay, so we will end on this note. We were saved from ending on the last note. Okay. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.